Yeah, hello everyone. Yeah, Jacqueline, you just surprised me because Ken always reads two announcements before he turns the mic over to me, and then I have to turn the recorder on. You read one announcement, and I wasn't ready. So it was just a matter of turning my own recorder on, which takes a second. But I am ready now. And hello everyone, and welcome to the Guiding Light. It's good to see you. This is the time that we read from the spiritual teaching of Ramana Maharshi. And right now I'm reading from a section called Self-Realization. And we will begin on page 62. But before I do that, I am going to play a song. And the song I picked, of course, I think I always play favorites of mine. But I think usually I don't really tell a story about why it's a favorite, and right now I feel like telling a story about why this is one of my favorites. This song is called Steal My Show by Toby Mac, and it's really about letting God or Spirit have this entire hour, so that nothing comes from me, everything comes from Spirit. I used to listen to this song a lot more than I do now, because now that feels more natural to me. I don't feel like I have to actively turn over. I feel like the turning over just happens as soon as I open my mouth. But as I was scanning for a song to play, this one just kind of showed up, and I thought, wow, you know, I haven't played that in a while. And that idea of turning everything over is still very much in my heart. So I feel like listening to it tonight. So here we go. Steal My Show by Toby Mac.
Thank you.
was fun listening to it again. So, we are here again for the spiritual teaching of Ramana Maharshi, and we're beginning on page 62, near the very bottom of the page. It's actually the last devotee question on the page, and this is the question. One has at times vivid flashes of a consciousness. Oh, we started looking at this last time. We just didn't finish. But if the question sounds familiar, we did begin. One has at times vivid flashes of a consciousness whose center is outside the normal self and which seems to be all-inclusive. Without concerning ourselves with philosophical concepts, how would Bhagavan advise me to work toward getting, retaining, and extending those rare flashes? Does practice in such experience involve retirement? And we really just looked at the first tiny, tiny part of Ramana Maharshi's answer. You might remember this. Because he said, outside, for whom is inside or outside? These can exist only so long as there are subject and object. And you may remember that I just stopped the teaching last week. And we did a little meditation to help everyone directly experience that there is no inside or outside, that inside and outside are mental concepts only, that they don't exist in reality. So that's why we didn't finish this answer. We stopped and did that meditation. And let me turn on my camera. I want to start getting in that habit as we prepare for Zoom. Okay. And let me maybe turn on another light. There we go. Maybe that lights my face up a little better for those of you who can see. So let's look at the rest of Ramana Maharshi's answer. Outside, for whom is the inside or outside? These can exist only so long as there are subject and object. For whom are these two again? On investigation, you will find that they resolve into the subject only. See who is the subject. And this inquiry leads you to pure consciousness beyond the subject. And so again, we kind of did that investigation last week. What we did was we closed our eyes. And you know, I think it only took us like 12 minutes. And what I did was I had you pay attention alternating between giving awareness to sound that appears outside the skin and giving awareness to sensations which appear to be inside the skin. And we just kind of kept alternating back and forth until I guided you to notice that awareness could be aware of both at the same time. And that actually, in awareness, there was no idea of inside or outside. There was just the simultaneous awareness of sensation and sound. And that the idea of inside being inside the skin and outside being outside the skin was a mental concept. And as we sat, we only did this for a few moments, but as we sat, being aware that awareness is both inside and outside, because there is no inside or outside. Awareness is aware of the sounds, and awareness is aware of the sensations simultaneously. We also noticed that everything was within awareness. Another way to say that, if you don't want to use the word within, is that everything is a part of awareness. In fact, you can look at that right now if you just close your eyes. And just take a moment to be aware of sound outside quote. Or maybe I should just say, just take a moment to be aware of sound. And then without losing that awareness of sound, go ahead and allow awareness of sensation. You don't need to go back and forth between sound and sensation. Awareness is easily aware of both sound and sensation simultaneously. And again, if you want to get the idea that sound is outside the body and sensation is inside the body, notice you have to go to concepts to get that idea. Notice you have to go to the mind. Notice awareness is just aware of sound and sensation without any idea about the sound being outside and sensation being inside. It's just aware of both. Easily, naturally. Awareness doesn't have to effort to be aware of sound and sensation. If we just place attention with awareness, instead of being lost in thought, and just look to see what awareness is aware of, we notice that it is naturally aware of both sound and sensation simultaneously. Now, one way to look at this is that both sound and sensation are within awareness. The truth is, there's no such thing as an outside of awareness. So it's possible that a more accurate way of saying it is that both sound and sensation are a part of awareness. Now the mind may divide, and the mind may say something like, no, I'm awareness, and sound or sensation is the object. But notice that's the mind. Pay attention to awareness, being aware of sound and sensation, and notice there is no idea of I and object in awareness. In fact, notice there is no dividing line between I, the subject, and an object called sound. Look and see, you cannot find a dividing line. You also cannot find a dividing line between I and any sensations you feel in the body. In fact, what's literally happening is that I am the sound and I am the sensation. Don't think about that. Don't think about that. Just look and see if you can find where I stops and sound begins. Can you find where I stops and sound begins? You can't, because I doesn't actually stop. The sound is a part of I. Can you find where I stops and sensation begins? Can you find where I stops and sensation begins? Again, you can't, because I doesn't stop. The sensation is a part of I, or the way some people word it, I becomes the sensation. The sound is a part of I, or the way some people word it is, I becomes the sound. But if you really look with awareness, not with mind, not with concepts, you can never find where I stops. Awareness in this case being I. You can open your eyes. And after having just that little taste, let's listen to what Ramana Maharshi says again. Outside, for whom is the inside or outside? These can exist only so long as there are subject and object. That would mean a separation between the two, right? That would mean subject stops somewhere and object begins. Two. Where's my camera? Two. Right? But we just saw that's not true. We couldn't find where I stopped and subject began. These can only exist so long as there are subject and object. For whom are these two again? And you can find these two in concepts in the mind. Right? On investigation, you will find that they resolve into subject only. Or as I said, the I doesn't stop, right? The I includes the sound. The I includes the sensation. It's all a part of I. Or as some would say, I becomes the sound. I becomes the sensation. On investigation, you will find that they resolve into the subject only. See who is the subject. And this inquiry leads you to pure consciousness beyond the subject. And then he continues. The normal self, and by normal self he means, in this case, the one that most people experience and call I. So the normal self for Regina would be the Regina body-mind personality, right? That's what he's calling the normal self. He says the normal self is the mind. The mind is with limitations. But pure consciousness is beyond limitations and is reached by investigation as above outlined. And so I would say that the brief meditation that we did at the end of last week and the brief meditation that we just now did are the types of investigation that you really want to give time to. Because these are the types of investigation that allow you to see that mental concepts are not true, that you are not the mind, that you are awareness, that awareness is one with everything. There is nothing outside of awareness. There is nothing separate from awareness. Never can separation or boundary be found. And yet unquestionably, that is what you are. Right? Unquestionably, that is what you are. And what's really interesting is, when we all look at awareness in a very deep way, we all have the exact same experience. We don't have different experiences. It's not that my experience of awareness is one and your experience of awareness is another experience. Why do we all have the exact same experience? Because it's the exact same awareness. I think we talked about this last week too. Minds are most definitely different. like I said, the news story right now is this story about this man Kavanaugh, who has been nominated to the Supreme Court by Donald Trump. And if you can watch the news without your mind getting involved with your opinions, you can see how passionate people are about their points of view, how deeply they believe their points of view. And yet you can easily and clearly see that it's not one point of view. You know, there are many points of view. So minds are not the same. And if I was to go into the Regina mind and develop a point of view about Kavanaugh, then I would have a story to tell about what I think. And my story would most likely be different than yours in one way or another. Even if we had similar aspects in our opinions, there would probably be differences too. But that's not true with awareness. When we go into awareness and we look at awareness, really look deeply, there is no difference at all between your experience and my experience of awareness. And that's because it's one awareness. We're all looking at the exact same thing when we're paying attention to awareness. That is our foundation. That is our essence. That is our truth. So that's the investigation. Again, Ramana Maharshi says, the normal self is the mind. This mind is with limitations. But pure consciousness is beyond limitations and is reached by investigation as above outlined. And again, I say, and as we practiced at the end of last week and the beginning of this week. Now, in the question, let me go back and look at the question again, because Ramana Maharshi's answer continues, of course, to address the question. So the devotee said, one has at times vivid flashes of a consciousness whose center is outside the normal self. So you can see how Ramana Maharshi has addressed those two ideas, outside, right, for whom is inside and outside, and he's addressed the idea of the normal self by saying the normal self is the mind. One has at times vivid flashes of a consciousness whose center is outside the normal self and which seems to be all-inclusive. Without concerning ourselves with philosophical concepts, how would Bhagavan advise me to work toward, now listen to this, because this is what Ramana is going to address next. How would Bhagavan advise me to work toward getting, retaining, and extending those rare flashes? So we're going to watch Ramana talk about getting, retaining, and extending those rare flashes. That's what he's going to talk about next. So, here's what Ramana Maharshi says. Getting. The true self is always there. You have only to remove the veil obstructing the revelation of the self. Right? So that was his answer to getting. There's nothing to get. Right? He says, the true self is always there. There's nothing to get. You have only to remove the veil obstructing the revelation of the true self. And we know that veil is the mind. Jay's asking what page. I'm on page 63. Alright, the second point, retaining. Ramana Maharshi says, once you realize the self, it becomes your direct and immediate experience. It is never lost. In other words, there's no effort to retaining it. Again, the only effort is in removing the veil that obstructs it, the mind, concepts, identification with the mind, right? But there is no effort in retaining this. I cannot tell you, oh, do yoga every morning for 20 minutes, start your day with deep breathing, pay attention to the body every day, and you will retain your awareness of the self, you know? There is no action to retain it. The only action is removing what obstructs it. And when you remove what obstructs it, then you are naturally aware of it because it is no longer hidden. Extending was the next part of the question. Extending. Ramana Maharshi says, there is no extending of the true self, for it is as ever without contraction or expansion. You know, this is a popular idea that many people on the spiritual path have, you know, of extending love to someone. And it's probably not even a bad idea in the very beginning of one's spiritual path, where maybe you were used to judging someone and now instead you're practicing, quote, extending love. That will probably help undo maybe some judgment. But there's no such thing as extending love, since love and self are synonymous. Love already is everywhere. It already includes everything. Everything is a part of love. There is nowhere to extend love. There is nowhere to extend the self. There is only to realize love. Only to realize self. Only to know truth. And again, if I am extending love to Brent Kavanaugh, or anybody else, I just picked him randomly. Isn't there an idea of an I and a him? And if I have the idea that I can extend love to Brent Kavanaugh or anyone else, haven't I lost the awareness of truth? Are I believing ignorance in that moment? So if you look very, very deeply at the idea of extending love, you'll find that the idea of extending love from one to another keeps you in ignorance. Keeps you identified with a me and that other one as an other. So there is no extending of what is already everything. Now, the next part of the question was, does practice in such experience involve retirement? And so here's what Ramana Maharshi says about that part of the question. Retirement. Abiding in the true self is solitude, because there is nothing alien to the self. Retirement must be from some one place or state to another. There is neither the one nor the other apart from the self. All being the self, retirement is impossible and inconceivable. So, you know, the idea that I need to retire, this kind of fits with today's gentle healing tip, actually. The idea that I need to retire from my job in order to realize, or the idea that I need to retire from my family in order to realize, is just putting a prerequisite in there that I think I have to obtain, and it's giving me something else to work toward. And while I'm working towards that prerequisite, how can I retire from my job or from my family? I am delaying truth realization. And Ramana Maharshi says, how can you retire from that which is all things? I had a funny experience today, and I thought, oh my gosh, if I told people this, they wouldn't even believe me. I don't remember where I was. I was somewhere on the road, and I had to go to the bathroom, so it was probably a gas station toilet or something. And I walked in, and there was a fly on the toilet seat. And my experience was that my heart leapt with joy. And then afterwards, my mind laughed, and I thought, oh, you know, must mean, you know, the fly was on the toilet seat, because, of course, the bathroom wasn't incredibly clean. I thought, oh, you know, probably other people, they don't have the experience of their heart leaping with joy. But see, when I first saw the fly on the toilet seat, my mind wasn't engaged. My mind wasn't thinking about it. And I was having a natural reaction of like, recognizing like. Just like the apple when the teeth bit into it. If you know my apple story, that was like communing with like. And it was the same experience when I walked into the bathroom today and saw the fly on the toilet seat. There was literally, my heart leapt for joy. And then afterwards I laughed, you know, because I realized what the eyes were seeing. I realized that secondly, so I laughed. But that's what Ramana Maharshi is saying. He's saying God is all things. The true self is all things. What is there to retire from or get away from? You are in God now. All that you need to do, again, is remove the obstacles. One thing that I've heard people say on the spiritual path a number of times is, if I don't like what I'm doing, if I'm not happy what I'm doing, I should change what I'm doing, because I should follow my bliss. Well, if I had used that as my guidance, that mental idea, because it is a mental idea, that if I don't like it, I should stop doing it because I should follow my bliss, I probably would not do dishes ever, because I didn't like doing dishes. I don't even always like getting up and taking a shower and brushing my teeth. You know, I can't make a long list now, but at one time I would have been able to make, pulling weeds, I didn't like pulling weeds, doing laundry, I didn't like doing laundry. If I avoided everything the normal self mind, if I avoided everything the normal self mind didn't like, I would probably just create suffering for myself. Our real job is to look at the mind and see where the mind is judging whatever is naturally coming into our experience, and to let go of the judging of the experience. When you let go of the judging of the experience, there's nothing unpleasant to doing dishes. There's nothing unpleasant to doing laundry. There's nothing unpleasant to pulling weeds. Right? All of that came from judgment. We are in God. Everything is God. There is nothing here to be rejected or retired from. It's just the mind that needs to be let go. The thinking, the concepts, the judgments. So again, regarding retirement, abiding in the true self is solitude. And the interesting thing about that, since everything is God or is the true self, that means we're actually always in solitude. Abiding in the true self is solitude, because there is nothing alien to the true self. Retirement must be from some one place or state to another. There is neither the one nor the other apart from the self. All being the self, retirement is impossible and inconceivable. Now, another thing that was in this last part of the question about retirement, it also said, does practice in such experience involve retirement? So now Ramana Maharshi is going to address the idea of practice. He says, practice is only the prevention of disturbance to the inherent peace. You are always in your natural state, whether you make practice or not. To remain as you are, without question or doubt, is your natural state. To remain as you are, without question or doubt, is your natural state. So the purpose of practice, then, he says, is only the prevention of disturbance. And what he means by that, you have to understand Ramana Maharshi's idea of practice really well, because, of course, he's not referring to repression. He's not referring to avoidance. You know, if you really look at Ramana Maharshi's teaching, especially the teaching of self-inquiry, you'll notice that he really recommends that you always abide as the self. And, for example, if a thought should come up, oh, my God, a fly on the toilet, I can't go to the bathroom here. You know, if that thought should come up, then I'm to ask immediately, who is it that has these thoughts? What is it that sees this thought? What am I? Right? I return to my non-conceptual, non-judgmental self immediately. And so that is practice. Right? If I am not naturally abiding in the self, that's because I'm still in the state where I need to remove the veil, remove the obstacles to love's presence. And I do that with practice. Right? And we've also seen that Ramana Maharshi considers devotion practice, right? And surrender practice, just as he does self-inquiry. So depending on my temperament and what works best for me, I could walk into the bathroom, see the fly on the toilet, and go, oh my gosh, I can't go to the bathroom here. And then I could remember a mantra. You know, maybe a mantra like, all is God, and start contemplating the fly as God. That would be a devotional practice. Or another option would be to look within. You know, and ask within in a surrender type way, why am I feeling such repulsion? What am I to do now? right? To surrender to the inner voice and the inner guidance instead of staying with the thoughts and the mind. Regardless of whether I'm using something like self-inquiry, something like a name of God mantra, which helps me to see that everything is God, or something like surrender to the inner teacher, I am doing practice, which is helping me, let's see, where's his words, to prevent the disturbance, you know, or really helping me to prevent staying in the disturbance, because in a way we could say the disturbance already happened. But it's helping me prevent myself from staying with the disturbance, believing the disturbance. So practice is only the prevention of disturbance to the inherent peace. You are always in your natural state, whether you make practice or not. Now, some people use statements like that to say, well, then I need not make practice. But if you aren't aware of your natural state, you're going to suffer. So again, the purpose of practice is to remove the obstacles so that we become aware of our natural state. So if you aren't experiencing peace, love, joy, then practice is your best response. You are always in your natural state, whether you make practice or not. To remain as you are, without question or doubt, is your natural state. To remain as you are, right? Just aware, being, ising, without any questioning of that, without any doubt about that. He says that's your natural state. Yeah, Kathy must have read my post today. She says Saint Benedict says strictness is probably necessary to rid oneself of the ego. Yeah, absolutely. You know, and I think that's true. You know, I have certainly been firm with myself. In fact, you know that because we just finished NTI Hebrews, and NTI Hebrews talks about being firm for the purpose of the heart, right? Yeah, and I love when we get to Inner Ramana. You know, when I was writing Inner Ramana, I had great resistance. I think it's possible that I had more resistance with Inner Ramana than I did with NTI. Just, you know, skin crawling resistance. You know, I just don't want to do this. And when we get to Inner Ramana, and some of you have already read it, so you know this, I asked Inner Ramana what I was to do with this resistance. And Inner Ramana said, be gentle with yourself. And I thought I was going to hear next, you know, if you're feeling great resistance, don't bother practicing. That's what I thought I was going to hear, but it's not what I heard. Be gentle with yourself and practice anyway. Right? Be gentle with yourself and practice anyway. And then that's the message where Ramana went on to explain that believing the resistance was like shouting in a cave. If I believe, for example, I don't want to surrender, or I believe I don't want to practice self-inquiry, or I don't want to journal, or I don't want to read Regina's tip today, then that's like shouting in the cave, I don't want to! And what comes back is an echo, actually many echoes saying, I don't want to, I don't want to. And so I continue to believe those resistance thoughts, and the resistance just drags out, possibly for an entire lifetime. And as the resistance drags out, the obstacle continues, which means the suffering continues. So Ramana said, be gentle with yourself and practice anyway. Because when you're hearing, I don't want to, and you sit down and do it anyway, you're not shouting in the cave, and therefore you don't get the echo. And pretty soon the resistance dies down, and you find the discipline is lovingly loving your love, Right? That's how Inner Ramana defined discipline. Lovingly loving your love. And, you know, it's funny because St. Benedict said something similar at the close. I'm switching over to Facebook. At the close of his prologue, you know, he had a reputation. If you saw the cartoon I posted yesterday, twice the monks underneath him tried to poison him because they thought he was so strict. Right? That probably just means their desire for God wasn't as strong as his. So he ends his prologue by saying, oh, he recommends through the sweetness of love for God to stay in the ways of God until death. But you see, through the sweetness of love for God. You know, that's just like Inner Ramana's definition of discipline. Lovingly loving your love. You know, it's a matter of knowing what we really want, right? Saint Benedict knew what he wanted, and he was not conflicted like the other monks were. So what they saw as strictness and discipline, he saw as the sweetness of love for God. Right? It's all a matter of how much you want it. And of course, those of you who are in gentle healing right now are in NTI James, where it asks you, remember, to be a conscious-minded teacher of yourself. And what does it ask you to consciously, actively teach yourself? What you really want. Right? What is your love? What do you really want? Because when you are no longer divided about that, when you are clear about that, then these things that look like discipline or look like strictness to others is really just your love. It's just what you want to do. You know, today we were driving back from Tucumcari, New Mexico. I have to think to say that. Tucumcari, New Mexico. And, you know, this morning we got up and I did take a bath in that lovely tub this morning. Went to breakfast, started back, and I didn't have time this morning for my contemplation before going. But I spent time contemplating in the car while Ram was driving. Why? Because I want to every day contemplate. And that was the opportunity that arose, so that was the opportunity that was used. And in fact, what I read today, what I downloaded in the car and began reading was, can anybody guess? St. Benedict's rule. That's how come you got a post about that, because that's what I was contemplating this morning. Right? Now some people may say, oh, you're strict. You do this even on vacation or even on weekends. Yeah, it's a book. It's a book. Saint Benedict's rule. Well, you've heard, yeah, Kathy's saying she's never heard of it before. You probably have, maybe, heard of the Benedictine order. We have a Benedictine monastery community in Colorado Springs. And in fact, our retreat house, when I first announced our retreat house, you know, way back in November of 2014, and I posted a link to the Benedictine retreat community in Colorado Springs as the symbol of what our retreat house was to look like. The difference is the Benedictine community has two things. They live in community, because that's what Saint Benedict taught. And then they offer the retreat house to guests. And I was using just the retreat house portion as a symbol of what we were going to do. I said we wouldn't have a community like them. But yeah, the Benedictine communities live by Saint Benedict's rule. Yeah, that's the book. That's their primary book they follow after the Bible. And it's been around since around, you know, 500 and, I don't know, 40 maybe AD. It's a very old book. one of the oldest books in the Catholic Library. Saint Benedict also is attributed with being the first Christian to approach God and become one with God through solitude. Because, you know, he was a hermit for many years, stayed in a cave just praying to God, meditating on God. And that wasn't something that the Christian communities did before that. They always lived in community. That was the tradition that Peter started, living in community. And so Saint Benedict is attributed with being the one who started the practice of solitude, of being alone with God as a way to reach God, rather than through community. So it'll be nice to go to that monastery. You know, I find a lot of similarities between Saint Benedict and Ramana Maharshi. Right? Ramana Maharshi also went into a cave, and then at some point began teaching. You know, because that's what everyone kept asking for. And Benedict did the same thing. He avoided it for a very long time, just like Ramana Maharshi did. But then at some point, the guidance came to be surrendered to that, and he became, in his case, an abbot, and Ramana Maharshi became a guru. But a lot of similarities. Yeah, it's interesting because we just read, you don't have to retire from anything, and we just talked about two people who retired to a cave for a very long time. But the real point is, you don't have to. And you have to listen to that very carefully. You should only do what you are guided to do. And people make up mental ideas that spirituality should look a certain way. And then they follow their mental ideas about what spirituality should look like instead of following their individual guidance. So the fact that Saint Benedict and Ramana Maharshi both, you know, went into solitude in a cave does not mean that solitude in a cave is what you should do, or that solitude, physical solitude, is what you should do. It also doesn't mean it isn't what you should do. You know, you have to follow your guidance moment by moment. And yeah, Jay is asking, where is the post that I mentioned about Saint Benedict? It's in the Italy group. I think it's called 2018 AT Italy Pilgrimage. And I make posts pretty much daily preparing us for the Italy Pilgrimage. And those who take the time to go and look at my daily posts, I would guess, will get more spiritually out of the pilgrimage than those who don't. So I really recommend taking a few minutes. And I try to make it something light each day. Take a few minutes every day to go in and look for my most recent post. And when you get there, your mind will already be prepared to contemplate. It will already be in that mode when you arrive. And you'll, as a result, you'll get a lot more out of the contemplative tour. Hey, we only have 4 minutes left. So I'm not going to go to the next question. I'm going to just put a little mark there for next week. And let me say something else. I just mentioned that, you know, you don't have to do what you see another saint doing. For example, one of the things we talked about was celibate. I posted a joke, which I know at least Kathy saw by her comments in the room. I posted a joke about some Italian monks also in the Italy group on Facebook. And by the way, everyone's invited to join the Italy group, whether you're going to Italy or not. I won't tell the joke in case some of you want to go read that, so I'll leave that alone. But one reason Saint Benedict probably has a reputation for being strict is that he became a hermit for God at a very young age. I mean, I don't know how old he was, maybe 19, maybe 20. And as you guys know, men have very, very strong sexual urges at that age. And as the story goes, if you saw the cartoon I posted in the Italy group, then you know this story. As the story goes, they say Satan instead of ego, right? They say Satan brought to him in his meditation a very real woman. She wasn't real, but very real. And I know what that experience is like. Not that I was brought a very real woman, but I was brought, what the ego brought to me was a very real experience of locations, because I like places. And I know how real it was and how tempting it was and how I had to remove my attention from those places in order to go further with meditation. So what was brought to Saint Benedict was this woman that he had actually seen before, lusted for before, and the sexual urges became very, very strong. And what he did, as the story goes, is he stripped himself naked and went outside to sticker bushes and threw himself in the sticker bushes to overcome the sexual urge. Now see, that's not something you have to do. But can we say that he should not have done that? No. We cannot say he should not have done that. Again, it's up to each of us to follow our own guidance. What we can be inspired about, at least in my humble opinion, regarding Saint Benedict and Ramana Maharshi and others like them, is their one-pointedness. Saint Benedict and Ramana Maharshi were never confused about what they wanted, that total relationship with God, which we call oneness. And there were no distractions in them. And this is why we should listen to them, contemplate their words, and then look at ourselves. And what I'm going to do is release the mic. And I think I'm taking over as admin now, but I will be taking a few moments to save this audio. Jacqueline is going to be beginning the Movie Watchers group, and we're going to discuss Saint Francis of Assisi, Brother Sun, Sister Moon, again in preparation for our Italy trip. She will be recording this for posting. So let me read an announcement as the admin so that she can just go directly into the movie group. I have to get back to my mail, because I went into Facebook. I had it all open and ready to go, but then I went into Facebook to read from Saint Benedict's prologue. All right, here's the announcement. This program, the Movie Watchers Group, is going to be recorded and broadcast for replay on our website, on Awakening Together Radio, and possibly on our YouTube channel. So please be aware that by speaking or typing on the board, you give consent to have your comments become a part of the recording. And of course, we're hoping that you do naturally give that consent, because we're hoping you'll join us in the movie discussion. Jacqueline, the mic is yours.